Coming up next on the Wells Tech Podcast, we have picks coming out of our ears. We'll talk about the three worst or not adopted picks and the three best picks of 2011. All that and more coming up next on the Wells Tech Podcast. This is Wells Tech, a podcast on the Streams Media Network, sponsored by Wells, Wisconsin Evangelical Lutheran Synod. Your show hosts are Martin Spriggs and Sally Draper. Join the conversation at wellstech.wells.net. Welcome back, everybody, to Wells Tech, the podcast about technology and ministry. I'm your host, Martin Spriggs, and this is episode 216 in the last episode of 2011, shared with you on December 28th. Joining me, as usual, for the last show of the year, Sally Draper. Good morning, Sally.
Good morning, Martin. Where did 2011 go? It just zipped right by.
Yep. And we had a show every week, as we have for the last almost now 4 years. So next week, we'll be celebrating 4 years of podcasts.
That's a lot of podcasting.
That is.
I've learned a lot along the way. And
I
one of the most challenging and fun things was to come up with a pick every week. That's a tradition we started on our very first show, where we just kind of go outside the box and look at and talk about things that are meaningful to us, things we see as potential usage for ministry purposes, and just try to cover all different aspects of picks.
Right.
We have hardware and software picks. We have mobile apps. We have all different kinds of things, education related, whatever it might be. And on this particular show, at the end of each year, we always look back at our year's worth of picks and pick our best and worst picks of the year, which has kind of gotten me into trouble in the past. I picked a worst pick and some people kind of came after me with a vengeance that it wasn't bad
That's a little extreme, but
yeah.
So, there's nobody at your doorstep. But.
Softening the terminology a little bit this year, and we're talking about, instead of worst picks, those picks that we haven't adopted fully.
Right.
So we don't make bad picks, I don't think, Martin. We just don't always make use of all the picks that we share on the show.
How could we? 52 a year, we'd be spending most of our time just learning these new technologies.
Yeah.
So, Sally, when you sit down to make a pick, what's the process for you?
Well, I mainly just kind of look around and think about what it is that's hot that I'm making use of currently, that maybe is something new that I've found that has filled a niche for me or been a benefit to me in my day-to-day working.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, I pretty much have a desk job, but I think there's a lot of church office personnel and pastors out there that are trying to manage a lot of computer applications and things at a desk as well. So I think I relate. Oftentimes we'll make picks related to education because I'm in the computer lab with the kids from our Lutheran Elementary School twice a week. And so maybe there's something new that I've found that I want to share that I think teachers or students would benefit from.
Right.
That's kind of my methodology, as scientific as it gets.
And I would say that's probably true for me as well. I'd say half the picks are things that I've adopted for either productivity reasons or for just general usage, you know, in ministry reasons. And maybe the other half come from inquiries or people looking for different solutions to different problems. So I've explored them, done some research on them, implemented them, tried them out, and shared my reaction of them. So that's, I think some of those are maybe why they got on my not adopted list, because they didn't necessarily meet a need for me, but that's not to say that they don't meet needs for other people. So I think that's why we do picks in general, just what's out there, what's useful, what may be useful for you, maybe not. And I think there's a difference in how you work and how people work, whether certainly by platform, whether they're Mac or PC, or whether they use mobile technology, or whether they serve in a classroom or a pastor's office, or you know, they do neither. So all of those go into maybe how are these useful or not as useful.
One big category that neither one of us mentioned was webmasters out there. And a lot of our picks do have to do with having great websites for proclaiming the gospel to the world.
Yep. So shall we get started?
I think we should.
And ladies first, as usual, we will start with the not adopted, and we rank them 1, 2, 3. Three in this case, one in this case being the thing that we really didn't adopt for whatever reason. Three being obviously down the pecking order a little bit. So what's your number three in your not adopted list?
My number
three,
not adopted.
We could call it an orphan, I guess.
Yeah, we should have drum rolls or something. Right. But my number three on the list is the MindJet mobile app. Mm-hmm. And MindJet is a tool that we use every single week, Martin. That's right. A mind mapping tool. And that's how we do our show notes, what we talk from as we're recording the podcast. And it has become an invaluable desktop computer tool for me. Mm-hmm. It's really how I think these days, and right. I can mind map things a lot quicker and easier in many aspects. But I have found that I haven't used the iPad app that I recommended on the show back on episode 205, I believe. Uh-huh. And it just is a little bit more cumbersome to make use of. It's all based on touch strokes rather than using the mouse, and it's just not something that I've really adopted fully.
Mm-hmm. The pick is timely here, or the non-pick, I guess, is timely because this application was just released, I think, yesterday or 2 days ago for Android. So it's not just iOS now, it's on Android. And I guess the application, as I'm thinking about this, and I haven't really played with it like you have, would be maybe in meetings where you're doing brainstorming and you just have a mobile device at your disposal where this might come in more handy than kind of day-to-day use. I mean, we really exercise it when we do our show notes and try and collaborate that way. But I think in general, this is probably an app that probably has a niche.
Right.
That we're not using.
OnePlus might be just syncing your existing maps from your computer to have them along with you on your mobile device, mm-hmm. and so that you can look up things on existing maps. But for the actual creation of things, it's just a little bit quirky to work with. So, as soon as I say it's a non-pick this year, I'll probably find a great use for it. But that's number three on my list.
Okay. My number three, I'm not adopted, is a tool called Task Force. It is a plugin for Gmail. I think they also have plugins for other platforms as well. Basically, the tagline is clear your inbox. And you know that I tend to gravitate toward productivity tools. This is one of those. Task Force allows you to convert emails into tasks and gets you a little bit more organized. Now, the product works really well, so I had no issues with how it worked. In general, however, I think how Google has implemented tasks within their products, Gmail in particular, is a little, I'll use the word wonky. It just doesn't, it's not intuitive, and it's not syncable with any other product. So it just kind of lives by itself. So I guess if you live in Gmail or live in the Google world, and that has to be where you manage tasks and everything else, then I think this would be a better fit. But I find, since I live most of my life in Outlook, maintaining a task list for my Gmail, which is more personal stuff, versus Outlook, which is more professional, just didn't work. I couldn't manage against two task lists. You really just need one, and that's what I use Outlook for. So I'm a big Outlook believer. I'm not saying that this is not going to be a good tool for somebody who lives in Gmail, because I think it could be. It does work well. The free version provides beautiful functionality, but it just doesn't fit my workflow. So that's why Task Force for me is not on the adopted list, but on the not adopted list.
Seems like every other day I hear about a new task list.
Yes.
There are a lot of options out there, and that can kind of bog me down, make for a long task list just deciding on which task list manager to use. So it's good to eliminate mm-hmm. some from the crowd and zero in on one. So you are an Outlook believer. Do you take Outlook Mobile?
Yep.
With
my phone, it syncs flawlessly, so I can see those tasks in my mobile environment. There's a lot, like you say, there's things like this coming along every day. The one that's getting a lot of attention right now is called AnyDo, ANY.DO, kind of a slick user interface, and mostly for mobile users, but nicely implemented, I think. Another one that I've mentioned a lot and that I still do use occasionally before I couldn't sync my phone and my computer was Remember the Milk. I think they kind of the gold standard for task management. So those are a couple to consider as well.
I'm a Toodle-Do user when I do make a task list.
I've used that too. So
lots of options there. And I guess the main thing is with the new year coming up, just make those lists and start checking off those things to do.
Yeah, the point is have a task list. However you do it, have one. So.
Okay. Very good. Next up for me, my number two non-adopted pick is something called Diagramly. It's diagram.ly. That's the web address. And this is an awesome Web 2.0 drawing tool. So you can make all kinds of org charts and network diagrams and people diagrams, all kinds of things like that right there in the cloud, save them, download them. Very versatile tool and quite impressive to use. I think it has a lot of potential. It's just not something that fits with my day-to-day workflow. I don't have this kind of need. It's not something I necessarily would expose the students to, although it certainly is a tool that they could make use of easily. Just not something I've really adopted, but still a great tool.
Yeah, this is an example of what can be done with Web 2.0 technology. I'm not sure what's behind this, whether it's HTML5 or JavaScript or what, or both, all of those. It is kind of a slick-looking interface and a Visio replacement for those that maybe don't want to pay the price for a Visio diagramming tool. So I think there's application here, but again, probably not the sweet spot for some people's workflow. So
yeah,
it is a good tool.
Definitely.
My number two is RDO. RDIO is one of the numerous now streaming music services. And there's things like Spotify, RDO, what's the Zune, Rhapsody, and Moog is the one that I use. When I recommended RDO, they had released some new features and really made this very useful. And I've come to the conclusion that they're kind of all about the same. They all charge about the same. It's basically for a premium account. It's $10 a month. It's an all-you-can-eat streaming service. So as long as you're connected to the internet, you can stream almost any song that you would like. There's millions and millions of songs available on all of these tools. Again, RDO, there's nothing wrong with it. It's just not the one that I finally decided on. The one that I finally decided on was MOG or Moog. Not for any super standout reasons either. I think in general I just like the interface a little bit better. There's a good mobile component to all of these. But at the end of the day, what I really use more than any of them is like Last.fm or Pandora, where they pretty much do the trick for me when I'm in the car or wherever and just wanted to listen to music. Just turn those on. But if you are – I guess it kind of makes you question why you buy music anymore. And I know a lot of people do when they want to physically own the DVD or download the iTunes music so they always have it. But with these subscription services for probably a lot less money that you would spend on, you know, regular purchases, you can have almost any song you want whenever you want it. So you kind of have the world as your playlist, if you want to put it that way. And I think all of these tools are good in that regard if that's what you're interested in. And it just makes a lot of sense. Now, you never really own the music, but you certainly have access to it when you want it. And Moog lets you download tracks. So even if you're offline or on a plane or you're not sure you're going to have internet access, you can download an album or two or three or whatever and play that when you're in offline mode. So that's why RDO is not on my adopted list.
Very interesting for me. Now, I am not a a data plan person. Mm-hmm. I use wireless exclusively. And so if my wireless goes down, I'd be kind of sunk.
Yes.
And if I'm driving down the road, I can't be listening to the internet in that situation. So,
right.
So I guess I see the application, the download application being really valuable. Mm-hmm. That's neat that you mentioned that. But yeah, we're still back in yesterday's news downloading and buying things from iTunes. So I guess mm-hmm. got a contrast going on there.
That's right.
So
you're number one in your not adopted list for 2011.
My number one, I had pointed to a blog post. It was from the Whiteboard blog, which is about interactive whiteboards in the classroom. Mm-hmm. And one thing that they had talked about was controlling your interactive whiteboard from your iPad so that you could pass your iPad around the classroom to the students or your classroom iPad around and have them doing functions up on the whiteboard. And they recommended an app called Splashtop Remote Desktop, which I didn't specifically try, but I did the same thing with TeamViewer, same exact concept where you're mobiled into a different computer, basically controlling one computer from another, in this case from your iPad, your tablet. Mm-hmm. And I just found it a little bit quirky. There was delays, and it was just not
a little bit immature technology.
Yeah, not easy to see. The screen gets shrunk down so small, even on the large
right.
iPad screen,
right.
That's very difficult to manipulate the board and things. Mm-hmm. And I just didn't see it as being a real seamless technology to use with the students. I think more time would be spent, oh, it's not working right. Oh, I can't make it do this. You know, trying to troubleshoot little problems and things than actually just passing the iPad around the room and doing something
right.
on the whiteboard.
Right.
So to me, get them up on the whiteboard. That's why you got the whiteboard there. And don't bother with trying to control it from the pad.
Right.
So that's my take on it. Maybe the technology will advance and things will improve in this coming year.
The problem that I've had with these apps, and I've tried the TeamViewer app that you mentioned there to remotely control another computer, and I would say it works, but you're trying to marry a touch interface with a mouse interface.
Mm-hmm.
So while you think you ought to be able to touch a place on the screen to open up a menu or interact with your remote system, really the iPad or whatever tool you're using is more acting like a touchpad where you're moving the mouse. So you're scraping your finger across to actually move the mouse on screen and then double clicking or whatever. So there's a disconnect there and it just feels very unnatural. Plus, as you mentioned, things get really small and then they're scrolling and all that other stuff. So I think there's a ways to go here. I think there are possibilities, but I think the interface and the approach has to be improved a little bit. So
yeah, I could just see it going downhill quickly with students in a classroom.
Mm-hmm.
As soon as things are like not intuitive, then you're going to spend all your time. It's going to be a big sink that you don't really achieve what you wanted to with the process.
Yep.
So
yep, I agree. Okay, my number one on the not adopted list is what's called LiveScribe Connect. Now, I'm a fan of LiveScribe in general. Just a refresher for everybody, LiveScribe is that digital pen that you use on special traditional paper. It's got regular ink, but it essentially records your pen strokes. And then you can transfer that to a PDF file or a native LiveScribe file. You can upload that to a LiveScribe server. It also takes audio recording. So if you press the button while you're in a meeting or whatever, taking notes, it'll record the audio of the things that are going on around it. And it's a very good tool. LiveScribe Connect, however, was an add-on to it that allowed you to quote-unquote seamlessly take what you've recorded and what you wrote and push it to some of these online services like Dropbox or Box.net or a file on your desktop. And while the concept is good, the implementation was horrible. It didn't work half the time, for one. And over time, while I believe that LiveScribe is a good fit for a lot of people who like to take more traditional notes in a meeting or whatever, I'm finding that I'm really digital from start to finish, if at all possible. If I'm taking notes, I want to be typing them in. I don't want to be writing it down. First of all, I can type faster than I can write. And at the end of the day, I can actually read what I type versus read what I wrote. So I think the technology in general has it is not a good fit for me. And I think the LiveScribe Connect technology in particular, which takes that written note and pushes it to your cloud environment automatically, just is not as seamless as they advertise it to be. So that is my number one not adopted, LiveScribe Connect.
So do you take your laptop into meetings typically?
I do. Pretty much, yeah. It's my constant companion.
Yeah.
I will take, if it's not a heavy-duty meeting or if it's a shorter meeting, I will just take a pad of paper and jot down a few notes. But then when I come back to the office, I'll just take those notes and either put them into OneNote or add them to usually it's adding items to task list that I've been assigned as you know, coming out of the meeting, things that I needed to get done. So,
interesting. So. Okay. My husband just got a Asus EPAD transformer, mm-hmm. so he has the keyboard with it. So yep. I think he's hoping that tablet/keyboard combination is going to be a good note-taking device for him.
There's promise for that. And that was actually one of my picks this year. It's not in my top or bottom three, but I like that particular concept where it can be a tablet and or kind of a more traditional keyboard-attached computing device. I think there's promise there. So he'll have to let us know how it's going.
Sure. So many options for mm-hmm. us.
Now to the good stuff, Sally.
Yeah, this was it was fun to review, and it was hard to narrow down to just three.
Yeah.
But my top three are definitely three that I use day in and day out. And starting with number three, I want to highlight a blog post from this summer that I did about Digo. Digo is a bookmarking tool where you can save your bookmarks in the cloud. So you find a favorite website and want to make sure you don't lose it. You save it, you add tags to it, and then you can go to your Digo account from any computer, any connection to the internet, even via mobile device, and search on your tagged items and find your favorite websites very quickly.
Mm-hmm.
We use it in a group setting where we share Wells Tech links with other people that are interested in Wells Techy kind of items with our Wells Tech group. And that's been very valuable to us. But this year, for me, one of the biggest breakthroughs that I've found is making Digo List, where I can take a group of related links and build them into a list, not only for myself, but also for sharing with others.
Mm-hmm.
So I give an example in this blog post that I'll link to of making a list of 4th of July links. And maybe there's crafts and decoration ideas and favorite YouTube videos all around the topic of the 4th of July. And then I can easily make that list public by just sharing a link, and other people can get to all of those different sites that I tagged.
Yep.
And for me, this was breakthrough because I was teaching some classes for Martin Luther College this year. And that's actually how I did a lot of the work in the class. I would share links via Digo List with the people in the class, and they could browse those links. They could save a link to my Digo List and have those links for use outside of class. And it just became a really invaluable tool to me on all those different aspects, saving personal links, saving to the Wells Tech group, and then making these audience-specific or topic-specific list of links, all of it. I'm a huge Digo fan.
This Digo just keeps getting better and better for me, and I think your example of lists is a great one. I've used this too. I taught a couple workshops at the Wisconsin State Teachers Conference a couple years ago, and I didn't have any handouts. I just pointed them to a URL on Digo mm-hmm. saying, here's all the resources that we just talked about. What's nice about lists as well is if you're on Digo, if you have an account, I can go into your list and see all the stuff that you did, see the comments you made about the links, but I can also add my own comments. So there's a dialogue that could go on back and forth about particular web pages or different topics along with your annotations of the site and all the other good stuff that Digo does. You can have this conversation, and I can imagine some nice classroom uses for that particular feature with Indigo. And by the way, you can get educators can get a Indigo account for free, which comes with that classroom management tool where you can manage students, and it's kind of can be a closed environment, closed Indigo environment. So I think this is a great pick, Sally.
And one more note, you mentioned that you can see my list and things. As a Indigo user, I can also mark links as private. So most of my links are public and publicly accessible. But if I want to make them private, I have that option as well. So very versatile tool.
Good stuff. Mm-hmm. My number three on my bests of 2011 is a little self-serving. But again, I pick these based on their usefulness and how useful they are to me. And I think from what I'm hearing, useful to others. And that's the Wells Online mobile app. This is an app that I created and through pretty simple to use tools. And I created an iOS version for the iPhone, iPad, iPod Touch, and also for Android. So there are two versions out there. They're a little bit different. I'm hoping that the tool, it's in beta now, that will allow me to push out the same upgrade that I made to the iOS side over to the Android side. It's a little slicker looking, and some added functionality as well. But essentially, it's taking anything that we, almost anything that we publish on Wells.net, certainly for audio and video, but also for some text as well, and making it available on a mobile platform. So you can go to the app and listen to the Wells Tech podcast just with a click of a couple finger presses. You can listen to the daily devotion, the Through the Bible in 3-Year Readings, special ministries devotions. On the iOS side, you can look at call lists, read the Together newsletter. All those kinds of things are available. Now, you could get most of these through RSS feeds and your RSS reader, but this just kind of brings them all together and makes it easy to grab something when you want to read or listen or watch it. So that is why that is number three on my list, and I've gotten a number of people offering feedback that say, hey, I use this when I'm out running or on the treadmill or doing the dishes or vacuuming. Just a great way to start the day or end the day or spend some time in God's Word.
In the Draper household, 2011 was the year of gathering around the iPad at the breakfast table every morning. So we start our day with the daily devotion Monday through Friday, and it's just kind of our quiet time. We sit down and listen to the devotion, look forward to it every day.
And it's so simple. It's 4 minutes of time in God's Word. And Mike Hintz over in the evangelism department here in the Synod office does just a great job with reading it, and he's got great authors lined up writing it, so it's always something fresh and relevant. So, and on top of all that, the app is free. So why not?
Love that price tag.
Yep. And hopefully we'll expand this in the future for Windows and BlackBerry and all that other stuff. So keep your eyes peeled.
Very good. Thanks for your work on that, Martin.
My pleasure.
Next up on my list, number two on my list, is Ustream.tv. And we've been Ustream users here at St. John's and Sleepy Eye for several years. We've been broadcasting our worship using a computer and camera connection in our church balcony. Been doing that for quite a while, but the reason Ustream made it on my list this year is because this summer they released an iPad app that allows you to stream from your iPad. So no longer do we have to be tethered to the camera computer connection to do live video streaming. And for us, this opened up the ability to live stream other events anywhere where we have a wireless connection. Particularly, we're doing our Sunday morning Bible classes each week now. And if we had school events or whatever, we could easily stream those as well. So this was a huge breakthrough for us. They have Ustream for just about all different kinds of devices now. So I'll be sure to include in the show notes a link to the Ustream Everywhere page. And you can even put Ustream on your Facebook page. So I'm sure there's other live streaming providers out there that are doing similar things. But for us, Ustream has been the adopted platform. And just making it available for iPad was just huge for our congregation.
Mm-hmm. I think 2011 was the year of live streaming, or web streaming. It seems like more and more congregations are doing it. We're getting more and more inquiries into my office about how to do it. And there's the tools are getting easier and easier to use. The live stream that we use at the Synod level is also a great product. And it just makes sense to take advantage of some of these technologies. And we shouldn't let anybody think that this is easy, though, because the technology is easy, but I think the time it takes to coordinate that and get people to operate cameras and such, that does take some work. But if it's done well, it's certainly a worthy ministry to do.
Yeah, and the fact that you can do it on a mobile device means that I literally sit in Bible class and mm-hmm. hold my iPad, and it is pretty easy to do. It's much easier than up on the computer with the camera coordination and all that. So it's pretty amazing technology. You know, one of the neatest things is there's been several times this year that I've met people that are not members of St. John's that are in different situations, like maybe someone whose husband fell ill and they were in a homebound situation, that have taken advantage of our live worship opportunities and, you know, express their appreciation for that. So that really makes a difference when you know that it's reaching out to people in that mm-hmm. way.
Yep. All right. I think we're up to number two on my best list. And my number two is Jotform. Jotform is an incredibly useful form generation tool that I think has many, many uses. I have not found any tool better in this category than Jotform. Basically a drag-and-drop interface where you drag the form fields that you want. So if you want first name, last name, email address, phone number, drop-down choice lists. They have online payment tools available for any kind of registration or information gathering needs that your church or school may have. Just super easy. The free version is very useful for low-volume types of forms. If you get a little bit more volume, then you just pay a monthly fee, and that's fairly small as well. But the forms look professional. They maintain the data there, and you can get reports. You can get alerts. You can send emails through it, all kinds of conditional branching. So if somebody answers this way, then you take them down this route of questions. If they answer this way, you go another route. Just a lot of features, and just ease of use is one of the reasons that I would recommend something like this. It's a lot of our listeners, I know, are Final Web users, and there is a forms tool there. But that is kind of in the dark ages when you compare to what Jotform can do. And then you can embed the form right on a Final Web page or any other website. It's just the right tool for the job, and that's why it's number two on my list of top picks for 2011.
And I just had to look quickly at their website, Martin, because I got an email. You know, there's 'tis the season for lots of year-end sales, and there is a deal available until December 31st that you can purchase Jotform, one of their yearly packages, and save 50% off.
Cool.
So if anybody's interested, they can save through December 31st over at Jotform.com.
Excellent. Nice catch. Good. Mm-hmm. And drum roll for Sally's number one pick for 2011.
We made it to number one, and my number one pick is WordPress, which is a blogging software. And there's two different flavors of WordPress. You can host on the WordPress site at WordPress.com, so go create a free blog quickly and easily, or you can do it yourself on your own hosted site at WordPress.org. You can download the software and install it yourself. We use WordPress for our personal blogs, Martin, as well as for our Wells Tech blog. I've used it for actually multiple personal blogs. I have a little blog that I do for my math counts team, for instance, at school. And so I'm posting math videos and puzzles and things like that. And that's just one example. You can do WordPress blogs for an event, say, mm-hmm. in your congregation or school that you want to just do a special highlight blog. For us, we are researching and studying the different stained glass windows in our church this year as a project in computer lab. And I've digitized those windows, and the kids are coloring them in different projects. And then we're learning the meaning behind why there's a beehive or a flame or whatever it might be. And I've created a special WordPress blog just dedicated to our church stained glass windows. And that's going to be something that's going to be there for a long time, so people can look back and learn about the stained glass windows even after our project is done. So really countless ways that you can make use of WordPress blogs. They're easy to do. There's a website called learn.wordpress.com if you want to get started. And it's just my favorite on-the-go website platform for lots of versatile uses. So
yep.
I'm a WordPress fangirl.
And I enjoy the tool as well. And again, I use it for my blog, and we use it at the Synod level for most of the blogs that we do here. And it's number one for a reason. It's just easy to use. It's well supported. There's a ton of modules and a ton of themes, so it's totally customizable. And I would say for the average congregation webmaster, it's very easy to set up. So there's a lot going for it. So nice pick.
Definitely.
All right, my number one pick. I'm going to give a little love to Apple for my number one pick of 2011, and it is the Apple MacBook Air. This is a new category that kind of came on the scene maybe a year and a half ago, 2 years ago, and it was kind of started by Apple. It's these lightweight, internet-focused computing tools that have no physical disk drive, so they don't have a place to shove a DVD in. This one does not even have an Ethernet jack. It's all wireless. Now you can get dongles and such that plug into the USB ports and so on and so forth. But this Ultrabook category, I think, is really the present and the future of computing right now. And I think we're seeing a lot of new products like this, not just from Apple, but from all the other vendors saying this is a category of computing device that is going to be hot. And Apple was there first, and they did a nice job with this particular machine. They put a solid-state drive in there, so you don't have any real moving parts. It's all RAM. You can get it in lots of different configurations. The one I have has 4 gigabytes of RAM, just a small SSD drive, 128 gigs. But with the internet-connected world that we live in and all the cloud computing services out there, I find that that's not a barrier. It's got enough processing power to run most every application I want it to run. And the convenience of having something so small and light is really awesome. Slips nicely in the bag. You know, the commercials show you putting it in a manila envelope. It's really well built. It's got a nice metal, you know, or aluminum finish to it, so it doesn't show fingerprints. And I think Apple has figured out how to do the trackpad thing better than almost anybody. I've never operated a trackpad that works as well as the ones on the MacBooks and MacBook Airs. They've just done a nice job with two-finger scrolling and clicking and dragging and just a nice implementation. The latest MacBook Air, one of the things they added was the backlit keyboard, which is really helpful because sometimes you're sitting, you know, on the couch at home or whatever, the lighting's not always the best, and when you've got that backlit keyboard, it just makes it easy to see the keys and do accurate computing that way, too. The screen is nice. It loads up in, you know, 10, 11 seconds, so it's not wasting your time while it's waiting to boot. So for all those reasons, it's really the computer I spend the most time on when I'm not in the office. So when I'm at home or on the road, this is the laptop that I take and really meets all my needs. So just a very cool product and a product category that I think we're going to see a lot of growth in 2012.
Very interesting. I have a young man who's been saving his dollars for his first laptop, and I keep telling him, you need to get an Apple. You need to get an Apple. So, I just feel like that's the wise direction to go, but we have never been Apple laptop users here. So we'll see what 2012 holds for us. If your prediction holds true, he may be an Apple owner before you know it.
Yeah. So. They are. You pay a little bit of a premium, of course. because I think some of the Ultrabooks that are coming out now from Asus or Dell or whatever are going to be a little bit cheaper. But I find that the technology just works, and it's a joy to use. It doesn't get in the way of me trying to compute. So that's why it's pick number one.
Very good.
So those are our picks, and we would love your feedback on any and all of those picks or your own picks for 2011. Was there a technology that really changed the way you work? Or things that made a difference in your ministry. We would love to hear those, and we have many ways for you to communicate those thoughts with us. First of all, you can obviously go to the website, wellstech.wells.net, where we'll have a rundown of all the picks that we just made here. Email wellstech@wells.net, or better yet, leave us a voicemail, 405 for Wells. That's 405-367-9357. We would love to get more voicemails on the show. We have a Twitter account, #WellsTech, if you want to call something to our attention there. Facebook.com/WellsTech. We mentioned Digo in the show. There's a listserv, all kinds of other ways that you can get to all of those from the show notes page, wellstech.wells.net. So let us know what you think. We would love to get your feedback. And Sally, we're probably going to have a ton of feedback for our first show of 2012.
Yeah, looking forward to that. It's coming up before you know it, and we will be saving all the different things that we hear between now and then for that episode. Mm-hmm.
And that will also be a very special episode for us. We will be celebrating the four years of Wells Tech Podcast. So that's our four-year anniversary or birthday or however you want to put it. So it was 4 years ago, essentially, for that episode that we started all this. And we're going strong. We'll also have a focus on the browser and optimizing your browsing experience. So kind of in the new year, get your browser tuned up to work the way you want to work. So we'll be talking about all kinds of tools and approaches for that. What is the best browser? What do Sally and I use as our day-to-day browsers? And what are some of the extensions that we use and the approaches that we take to bookmarking and favorites and those kinds of things? So tune in next week for that. I'm definitely looking forward to celebrating 4 years, and we would love to have you along for the ride. Let's close the show with some more Christmas music from Joey Schumann as he plays Joy to the World from the album Light That Shines in Darkness. Thanks, everybody, for joining us. Have a blessed, blessed New Year.